Over the years, we've had thousands of attractive, charming folks on the podcast. People we've had great chemistry with, and others who, when we met, it was murder.
So naturally, since we get so intimate with the guest on the show, one of the most common questions we get asked is, did you sleep with them? Today, licensed marriage and family therapist Damon L. Jacobs is back once again to answer our hard questions on relationships and creating content in this complex OnlyFans Instagram age we live in.
Damon is best known for his work with PrEP and HIV prevention and has a lot of great insights into the ethics behind doing a talk show where we, as Carol Channing once said to us, ask very penetrating questions.
Listen as we take a look at hating on men when you are sexually attracted to them and right-wing media's war on men, where they talk about low testosterone levels but avoid discussing environmental pollution, healthcare, and mental health as a source of these problems.
Plus, just as we are about to board a flight, a federal judge strikes down the CDC's mask mandate for travelers. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
And Murder. No one knows what heart-to-heart is anymore.
They do, too. Here at Feast of Fun, we are very sex-positive, sex-enthusiasts. We want you to live your best life, and we want you to fearlessly be yourself and go out and pursue your dreams. However, sometimes when you're doing all that stuff, you can run into some sticky situations. Our guest today is a licensed family and marriage therapist, Damon L. Jacobs, best known on the internet as an HIV prevention educator, a PrEP whore, right? Do you call yourself that?
Slut.
A PrEP slut.
But I've been called the whore a lot.
And whore by other people.
Because I don't get paid.
And host of a naked talk show where I've been a guest. And most of the guests are naked.
They are all naked.
And some of them you have had sex with or may have had sex with them in the future. And one common question we get asked from our guests is, have you had sex with so-and-so who was on your podcast?
Why do you think people care about that?
Because they're turned on by the guests. They think the guest is sexy. And so they want to know whether we experience that with them. And I say to them, you know, surprisingly and shockingly, as gorgeous and beautiful as these people are, or sometimes, you know, we have the opposite. They are like, we are like cats. We despise each other. And people are like, that was sexual tension in the room. You guys had sex afterwards, didn't you?
Well, they pick up on the little clues here and there, right? Things you say, or if they flirt with you, or they say something and they're just like, what happened? Or they themselves are imagining it, you know?
And, you know, I turned to Mark and I said, I don't want to impose myself on other people. And we've seen gay men in public spaces or in private spaces shove themselves, put themselves in situations where the other person could not say no. Really wrong. It felt very unethical. It felt bad. This is not the person I want to be. And so, you know, as we do this podcast 17 years, you know, we're more talking about like creativity and spirituality and, you know, identity and the artist's journey on Feast of Fun. But, you know, with our new podcast, Let's Grow Big Together, there's a lot of talk about the body and sexuality, as you're doing with your tub talks, right?
Yes. I just put together the LGBT part of Let's Grow Big Together. Got that right now. I can't believe it took me that long.
It's meant to be coded, you know. It's not, you know, my mother was always like criticized, like, Feast of Fun is so gay. It's like, why are you doing do a show that appeals to straight people? I'm like, okay, Mom, here's Let's Grow Big Together. And she's like, not that way.
But again, you know, it's a topic. We're talking about muscle and bodybuilding, but it's also a lot of talk about sex and sexuality and being turned on.
That's and beautiful. Fathers and, you know, your dreams, your desires and, you know, failure, embracing failure. And, you know, to me, it's like it's this rich treasure trove of conversation that used to take place in the dawn, the very beginning of gay journalism, when it was illegal to even print the word, you know, gay in a newspaper or a magazine. So they stuck him in physique pictorials.
Right.
And the back pages are like, interview with a homosexual, and or yeah,
with a bodybuilder,
with
right?
a bodybuilder,
or a physique
yeah,
model.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
was the code.
When that
you
was the code.
Say,
and
you
so
couldn't say gay then.
You couldn't say gay like in like Russia and Moscow or
Florida.
In
Florida.
Or in Florida, right? Yep. And so, you know, to me, it's like we're using the newest form of technology to talk about one of the oldest topics, which is sex. Mm. And inevitably, you know, as we have these beautiful bodies in this home studio, you know, Mark and I having a conversation about it, like, how do we set up a good relationship and good communication with our guests in order to not exploit them or pressure them in a situation or pressure ourselves into having sex with them and, you know, exploiting that power dynamic. And I talked about this with a friend of mine. And he said, well, you know, you're kind of are forcing them to have sex with you to some degree, because if they want to get a good edit from you or get treated well, they don't know you, there's this unconscious expectation of having sex with the ghost. The host is going to then get a favorable outcome. And so as somebody who has a lot of experience in talking about ethics in relationships, and you also are naked with your guests in a tub, I thought you'd be the perfect guest for us to talk about this on the show.
All right, let's talk about it. What would you like to know?
Well, you know, what do you say? Do you prepare your guests in any way to say, you know, I know we've had sex before, but this is really going to be just us talking in a bathtub naked?
No, I often let the energy go where it's going to go. Okay. There are some guests that I've had who I have been sexually active with, and sometimes
while the interview was taking place.
Well, not. I mean, there's not a lot we can do within that confined space.
Yeah, yeah.
But sometimes it's led to that with some guests. Some uh-huh. guests who I have that history with. Other guests, it you know, we hang out afterwards, and that's fine. But most of the guests, that's not something that happens with. Or there might be chemistry in the tub, but mm-hmm. that's not something that leads to further physical contact outside the tub.
Once you're dry, it stops.
That's just kind of it. That's usually how it goes. But I guess I love, like, I think all of my guests' bodies are beautiful. I mean, all of them. Men and women. I just think that bodies, human bodies, are beautiful. And I celebrate bodies. And I'm just so grateful when they do show up and they do come and they do sit in my bathtub that we're having this experience together. Again, sometimes there's a chemistry in that that goes, that lends itself toward the erotic. But other times it's just like we have that in the tub and then they get up and leave and that's great.
I mean, you've interviewed your ex-boyfriend, Matt.
Quite a few of them.
Yeah.
there's quite a few of my exes in there.
And
yeah.
So, you know, are they like, in some degree, are they like, is this a sneaky way to get back together, Damon? Or, you know, it's like, is there any, I mean, because they seem very generous and very honest in talking with you. And, you know, I could see this like being this kind of like harebrained scheme to, you know, try to get back together with your ex.
Like it's something like right out of I Love Lucy or something.
Yeah, it's like, I'm just going to do a talk show. Okay. And we'll be naked together.
That sounds more like Jack McFarlane than yes, Lucy. And, okay. and definitely not my thing. If I want to get together with somebody, I will just tell them.
You'll just
I have out. No need to put up any right. premise of
you're
anything.
You're communicating.
I would just say it. Right. I don't have any inclination mm-hmm. to have a partner at this time. I don't mm-hmm. have any inclination to have a primary boyfriend at this time. Yeah. So, but if I did, I certainly feel the agency to communicate that with whomever mm-hmm. would be on the receiving end of that.
Does that mean
request.
You're aromantic right now?
I don't really like that term aromantic because no. I think most of what people define as romantic is defined by Hollywood standards, mm-hmm. which is all about putting up an illusion of fear. This idea that I can't live without you. I can't live if living is right. without you. That's not love. That's fear. I think rarely in media do we ever see real representations of love that's expressed throughout the span of a relationship. So I wouldn't say I'm aromantic. I think I very much appreciate the fun and beauty and play of connection with various people in various ways. And the bathtub is one of the ways I experience that connection. The bedroom is one of the ways I experience that connection. There's so many ways that I experience that
Do you
connection.
Think the bathtub and the nudity adds an intimacy to
Definitely.
The
Definitely. That's yeah. why I did it. So I started this series because I just didn't want to do a bullshit talk show where
like Feast of Fun.
No. You two are definitely get more under the surface yeah. than most. But there's a lot of Zoom interviews mm-hmm. going on. There's a lot of podcasts, which are great. But I always said if I was going to do an interview series on my own, it would have to be naked. And
I appreciate that.
And it, because most people won't actually do a fully naked video with me. I thought, well, the bathtub is sort of the intermediary where you still have nudity, but the audience can't see the genitals.
I don't want and people I can still looking show it on YouTube while I'm talking to you.
But wouldn't that be amazing to have a naked talk show where people just sit and hang out and talk about life's issues when they're naked?
You know, that sounds like old Calcutta meets the Tonight Show. That's a Broadway reference. It was a notorious Broadway musical where the cast was naked. And later on, there was a franchise called Naked Boys Singing.
Yes, there still is. It's been revived.
They still play around.
Yes.
I played here in Chicago for years.
I think they're back in Vegas now.
And you've had a few of the Feast of Fun guests on your show as well.
Yes, we've mixed some guests together. Vicky, who I love.
I was a little surprised when I saw Vicky come up on the screen. I even commented. And she's like, I kind of surprised myself that I did this.
She is brave. She is bold. She is brave. She is so fierce.
She's the author of the book Fag Hags, Divas, and Dykes, The Women Who Helped During the AIDS Crisis.
Right. And you have to be fierce and bold and brave to have a title like that
in the HIV world. And she's amazing. Norwegian or Swedish grandma? I think she's a grandma. Yeah.
Can't remember.
No, I don't think she's a grandma. She's a mother.
She's a mom.
Yeah. And I don't know if she's Swedish, but she did bring a Swedish
that's why I associate cinnamon rolls. With her. Yes. Yeah, from the Swedish and Sathers. Mm-hmm. Yes. I pronounce it correctly, by the way.
Yes.
Not Sathers, you ignorant fools. Oh. It's Sathers. Ooh. Sathers.
And we also, Michael Chansley is another guest we have in common. He's been on your show. Kareem was in my tub. Yes. Kareem was on your show and Kareem was in my tub. I love Kareem.
So all these good looking people.
Love Kareem McKenna.
You know, you keep your hands above the tub.
You know, one thing I don't do is kiss and tell. So
how did you get Vicky naked?
I asked her, would you please be on my show and get in my tub and have a conversation? She said, yes. That's pretty much how it went.
Why are you laughing about that?
I just think it's kind of funny because I know because I only know Vicky with clothes on. Right. And
Vicky, the thing about it is that Vicky is this passionate, resourceful, brilliant writer, somebody who's dedicated her life to advocating for the marginalized, especially when it comes to gay men and HIV and AIDS.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So for her to be in this sort of like, you know, we're comfortable in being this in a, you know, the tub is a ridiculous space. And it's a ridiculous space to have a talk show. And, you know, even the premise of interviewing people about sexuality or their bodies is also ridiculous, too. And so having her being in that space is, to me, is like, it makes me have a deeper respect and appreciation for her.
For her, for Michael Chansley, for Kareem, for all 44 of the people. Well, actually, I've interviewed 48 people now, but 44 of them are up right now. I have so much respect and regard for all who have shown up and done this series with me because it is ridiculous. That, to me, was one of the gifts I gave myself turning 50. And I know you just had a major milestone here, I don't know if you've experienced this. Woo! Happy birthday, Fausto! Welcome to the 50 Club!
One of the reasons why
I started this show after I turned 50 was like, this is the time in my life I want to be silly. I want to be ridiculous, but also talk about real issues. So we're talking.
You're putting the nasty into dynasty.
Something like that, yeah. So we're talking about these issues about sexuality, HIV prevention, social justice, Black Lives Matter, racism, misogyny, ACT UP, body dysmorphia, but we're doing it in kind of like a religious, a ridiculous situation.
With clown noses and
makeup. We're not, well, that you were wearing a turban, but I think that was the furthest we got with costumes when you and I did our interview.
I felt like I was like Taft in the bathtub, getting stuck in the tub.
That happened at my college university.
Is that famous President Tab?
He got stuck.
He
in
was
the
a
bath-
big guy.
He got stuck in the bathtub in Erie, Pennsylvania, at the mansion that now became part of my school, the Old Main, they call it.
Wow.
And back in the day, he was a conservative, very regressive politician.
You know, it was the 1800s or something like that.
But by today's standards, he's like liberal or something.
So that's the premise of Tub Talks, is this serious conversations in a silly situation. Yeah. And that ability to be silly and ridiculous, for me, gets easier and easier the older I get.
What guidelines can we set? Should we even say anything? Does that make things even worse? I need your guidance. I need your feedback in getting the guests coming over and feeling safe and feeling protected and feeling comfortable to talk about the most delicate things that are on their minds, their bodies and their dreams.
I would say that you two have pretty good track record, 17 years of doing this show, yeah, where you've proven you are reliable and trustworthy and respectful. Do people need more coercing or understanding than that? I mean, well, I think I'm people having, feel comfortable yeah. being vulnerable.
I don't want to come off like some kind of Louis C.K. or like, you know, the thing is with me is like, for me, I don't really, I'm not an aggressive person. I'm not somebody who usually hits on people. Mm-hmm. I usually am the one who gets hit on. Mm-hmm. Just, you know.
You said, what was your catchphrase? I'm sorry that my beauty oppresses you. Or I say being drop dead gorgeous is not consent. Mm-hmm.
But it's also, yeah, do I stop them from crossing the line?
I mean,
you know what I mean?
I believe consenting adults have the right to experience pleasure and connection in any way they choose to do so. I'm not about policing that. I'm not about restricting that. At the same time, if you feel like it could push a line, or if you're worried about going overboard, you could always like write a statement, I guess, before they come over saying, this is not what we're here for. These are the board guidelines of what we're going to do today. If you think that's going to help them, but I don't know.
Well,
do you think
them,
that's necessary?
I don't know. You know, part of me is like, I go like, you know, like we've learned in doing the show, we observe other people who are masters of their crafts. One thing they do is they talk to the guest a lot about themselves before the interview starts. So on the program, they're not like, where are you from? You know, they're trying to establish things that the audience already knows. Mm-hmm. Like the audience knows who Mark and I are. And so, but the guest necessarily doesn't know that. And so by talking a lot about ourselves, that prepares them. We prepare them by sort of telling them what we're like to talk about. And so they have a good answer to have ready, like we just did with you. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, and part of it is like a lot of these people that are guests on Let's Grow Big Together are friends of mine, or people that I have expressed affection for, or received affection, or, you know, there is a sexual connection there and no denying about it. And so, you know, I don't want them to feel like they're going to put themselves in a situation where they're going to be forced to do something they're not comfortable to do.
Okay. You know?
And
you're the guy
to turn to saying like how to establish that. And maybe it's just communicating that.
You could communicate. You could use your words. I think words are great.
Use your words, Shelby.
Use your words.
What do you say to somebody, you know, and this is like dovetailing into another common thing that I hear our guests say, our friends say, who have sex with men, whether it's cisgender or transgender men or non-binary men. It's like, I hate men. And I'm like, well, then go lesbian, you know, become a TERF or whatever. But it's like, you know, there's this undercurrent frustration that people have with their sex lives and their relationships, where they just go issue this blanket statement. And it feels like, well, you identify as a male. I identify as a male most of the time, you know, where does that leave you if you're just throwing away, you know, half of the population?
Well, and sometimes I think people just say that because they just want to like release or have a catharsis of that kind of energy. Yeah. And that is what it is. They don't need that to be addressed. But if someone's really having those feelings persistently and it's causing them stress and disconnection and loneliness, then I think that's a real problem that does come up in the therapy room quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And what that generally points to is an underlying internalized hatred, an internalized homophobia, which we all carry in this culture, in this society. I believe all of us carry a sense of homophobia, transphobia, misogyny, racism. That's indicative of the culture we live in.
We call it the Phantom Menace from Star Wars.
Even gay people themselves.
Especially gay people themselves. Mm-hmm.
And the more you deny the fact that you have that, probably the stronger the Phantom Menace is.
Right. It's
like the dark side of the Jedi Force.
Well, these are all parts of who you are. Yeah. And if you're going to deny or dismiss parts of who you are, then you're definitely going to deny and dismiss them in others as well. This is what I've written about, why I think there was so much vehemence and anger against PrEP when it came out, when I started talking about this, because it represented a side of sexuality that so many people had repressed within themselves because they felt pressured, because they felt should, because they were involuntarily celibate at the time.
Because the idea was PrEP was going to turn everybody into just these people that had sex all the time.
Yeah.
And that's what people wanted to do. They wanted to have sex.
It's like, why would that bother you? What, if you are having the kind of sex you want and you have the agency in your life to say yes to the kind of sex you want, why would it matter to you what I or anybody else does. Mm-hmm. But that's not where the anger was coming from. It was coming mm-hmm. from people who weren't having the quality and quantity of sex that they wanted to have and did not feel agency to ask for the kind of sex they wanted to have.
And I do feel like people are finally getting it. I feel like personally, you know, anecdotally, I'm seeing less of that kind of like shaming about PrEP. I feel like people are finally getting it.
I feel like there's less of that, quote, Truvada whore shame mm-hmm. that was so prevalent 10 years ago. I feel like there's less of that natural, like, default, like, oh, you're wrong and you're bad if you disclose you're using PrEP in social mm-hmm. media. So I do think there's less of that. I think that was natural now that it's so normalized mm-hmm. over 10 years. Not mm-hmm. everybody, we're not even close to the right amount of people using PrEP. Mm-hmm. But at least the idea, that concept of using a pill to prevent HIV is no longer this groundbreakingly shocking new concept.
How far away are we from that? From the amount of people that should need to be on
it. Well, let's explain what PrEP is for people who are tuning in, right?
So okay. PrEP stands for pre-exposure prophylaxis. It's a daily pill that someone can take to reduce the odds of getting HIV by greater than 99% when taken as directed.
I heard it was 96%.
Nope.
CDC, more effective than a condom.
CDC, more effective than a condom. You know, when did the FDA actually authorize condoms to be used to prevent anal
sex? Like 6 months ago.
Literally 6 months ago. Mm-hmm. Some people think it was 85, 87. No, literally the FDA approved the first condom to prevent HIV through anal sex in January.
Oh, this year?
So it was just a few months ago.
Oh, wow.
Because we didn't have data or science to sustain that condoms actually worked. Now, they do work, but PrEP has been studied. There were studies. There have been several efficacy trials replicated and validated over and over again that show that when people use this as directed, it's over 99% effective in preventing HIV.
Mm-hmm. Now, they did do a study also, too, recently that people taking HIV medications were less likely to get COVID. Now, I'm not sure if it was people like with HIV taking HIV medication or if PrEP was included in that study.
Let's talk, because I don't think that theory panned out. No? I think that was a theory at the beginning.
No, I think something came up recently.
We'll have to. I'll be curious. Because in the PrEP Facts group on Facebook mm-hmm. that I used to run, PrEP Facts Rethinking HIV Prevention and Sex, that I was running at the time COVID came out, there were a lot of trials that were looking at that. And as far as I was aware, none of them mm-hmm. actually panned out in terms of significant impact of HIV meds or antiretrovirals protecting people from COVID, nor any of the PrEP medications protecting people. But if I'm wrong, let me know. Michael Chantzley is running that group now, former guest of yours. He's a guest of mine in the tub, and he does such an amazing job. But he would probably be more on top of that science than I am.
Yeah, my understanding is that the most recent study that came out, there is a benefit, a side hustle to taking PrEP, which is improving your chances of not getting COVID, and if you do have COVID, shortening the
That's very the interesting. Rations. If that has come out, I really want to know because I'm not familiar with that.
But the thing about it is like, you know, this past year, my mother's gone into a nursing home and that's been an emotionally intense thing. And having a lot of family members coming in and stay in her home, you know, my mother got one of those like senior jacuzzi tubs. And she never used it because she like was afraid of falling. But of course, I'm staying at the house and I'm having a fabulous time sitting in this giant, beautiful jacuzzi for a senior citizen. You know,
wow,
it's very therapeutic, right? And so I have a family member that comes in and it's like, you know, because I'm the slutty one, and it's like, hey, Fausto, do you have any condoms? I have a really hot date tonight. And I'm like, well, I don't have any condoms, but I have PrEP. You can take two pills right now. Because your date's going to be in a couple hours, right? And then you can take a pill tomorrow and the day after, 2-1-1. Mm-hmm. And that will be amazing at, you know, preventing HIV infection.
Right. The 2-1-1 regimen is one of the proven regimens to prevent HIV. The caveat is that you really have to be careful about the timeline with 2-1-1. They really have to be taken within certain intervals.
Right.
So it'd be So like, let's say it's 4 o'clock now and I'm planning to have sex at 8 o'clock tonight. I would take two doses of PrEP now at 4 o'clock. If I have sex tonight, great, have a great time. And then tomorrow, I want to make sure I take one additional dose at 4 p.m. And then the next day, another dose at 4 p.m., give or take an hour. So it really has to be within certain intervals.
But that's the optimal.
I thought it was 2 hours before sex.
Two doses anywhere 2 to 24 hours before sex.
But the point here is that, you know, even imperfect taking this is better than nothing at all.
Absolutely. It still works. And by the way, that the 211 is only studied for anal sex. We don't have the data to show that it would work for vaginal or front hole sex. But getting back to the prep.
So anyways, this family member who I thought, you know, was very liberal, progressive. Obviously, they're feeling comfortable barging in while I'm taking a bath, asking me for condoms. And then I say, oh, yeah, the prep. And they respond like, you're trying to push medication on me that harms your liver your kidneys. Do you know what that stuff does to you? And then they wouldn't let it go for days after that. And I'm just like feeling like Beyonce. I'm like, you must not know about me. You must not know about me. Because I'm like, how do you pretend to be this like family member that knows and loves me and understands me and has no idea that for the last, how long have we been talking about PrEP?
10 years now.
10 years.
The FDA approval was almost 10 years.
Ten years with you and thousands of other people, and it's like we've dedicated so much of our energy and our lives. And I'm like, you must not know about me.
Would you say this is a person who's generally resistant to science and medicine in general?
Not at all.
Do they generally believe in COVID vaccines?
This is their COVID vaccine. There's this weird, interesting thing that I've started observing during the COVID pandemic that, you know, in terms of anti-vaxxers. Mm-hmm. It's an appealing thing to both progressives and conservatives. There's this weird undercurrent of American culture where they feel like any kind of medication that you can take to alleviate pain and suffering is evil because it comes from man and science and And so, it's weird, right? Like you would either think that like Republican fascists would reject the COVID vaccine, but somebody who, you know, Black Lives Matter, Whole Foods shopping, you know, people would describe them as neoliberal to some degree.
Well, and I think
they
share
this in common. They're just like, if I take aspirin when I have a headache, then I'm addicted to aspirin.
So I think part of that is Puritan ethics, which say you, quote, should suffer through whatever pain you're going through. Mm-hmm. And then there's a really intense suspicion, as you said, both left and the right, of the pharmaceutical companies. And this idea that they're all evil and they're all out to make money. And you know what? They probably are evil and they probably are out to make money. And I'd say, so the fuck what? If they give me the drugs that I need to have the quality of life that I have, to kind of have the kind of sex that I want to have throughout my life and to be protected from COVID and HIV at the same time, I will support the evil empire for that. I'm signed up for that. Sure. They might be evil. And the fact they're evil doesn't diminish the fact that they're helping me have a better quality of life.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and part of this like makes me think about another public health issue that we talk a lot about on Let's Grow Big Together, which is the dramatic reduction in testosterone levels, and not just men, but in women as well. Women have testosterone in their bodies as well. Everybody needs estrogen and testosterone to be healthy. And these hormones, especially testosterone, are dramatically dropping across our population. And so conservatives like Tucker Carlson on Fox News have done this hilarious series called The End of Man that's airing on this week. And it looks great, actually. And it has a lot of homoerotic, muscular, naked men doing things like flexing and tanning their balls or doing infrared therapy on their testicles.
I swear, one used to have to watch a Madonna video to get that much flesh.
Madonna was
also
somebody.
Homoeroticism. But now we have Tucker Carlson. So, okay. Thanks, Tucker Carlson. It's a beautiful video.
I don't want to think about Tucker Carlson and gay sex. Please.
Well,
I don't want to think about
Tucker Carlson and that context.
But I am interested in the infrared balls.
Infrared balls, yeah.
Well, because people use that infrared therapy. It's supposed to be very good for like building up the collagen underneath your skin, right? It's supposed to be really good for your skin level, but like, I mean, there's a certain amount of heat involved and you don't want to heat up your balls too much, right?
Well, and there's not a, you know, this is the predicament that we have in, which I, you know, because I also follow a lot of bodybuilding forums, and one common complaint on alternative medicine and all that stuff is that there is no significant funding to understand what's causing these things and how to undo them or mitigate them, because there's not a lot of profit to be made from even testosterone replacement therapy or, you know, like, for example, zinc lozenges.
I thought the testosterone replacement industry was pretty robust.
It is, but not in stopping or undoing what's causing the drop in testosterone in the first place.
There's a couple of things. They think it's environmental, right? So they think it's the
speculations, the pollutants,
and what we're eating, that kind of stuff. But also, too, obesity rates are higher, and people who are more obese usually produce less testosterone.
And Americans are just less active now. Yeah. They're working from home. They're staying at home. They're having their food delivered at home. They're pooping at home.
But like Tucker Carlson, I'm sure, is painting this as some kind of like a liberal agenda to make us all feminine, right? Like it's a forced feminization fetish.
Yeah, you know, and to some degree, like even the gay frogs that you heard from QAnon and all that stuff, there is actual data and science and facts that, you know, there is something, the microplastics and lethargy and poor diet and pesticides and all these components are harming us to some degree. And instead of like getting people to say, well, you know, are we electing the politicians that are going to try to find solutions to this? Are we holding, you know, the pharmaceutical industry accountable? Are we funding this research? They do the opposite. They actually enable corrupt, crooked politicians like Donald Trump to retain power and get elected. They allow, you know, this whole madness and don't say gay in Florida and Texas and Oklahoma to take place. And instead of actually coming up with solutions to real problems that we are facing.
So I guess I don't really know that whole paradigm and the Tucker Carlson's position on this, but I will say this. I think what gets lost in those, if we're going to have like a serious conversation about that.
We don't have to.
I mean, if Tucker Carlson were willing to, I think what gets left out is of always the mental health and how we perceive sexuality in terms of how much energy we feel. Now, I haven't had my testosterone levels measured because they haven't been a problem, but I'm about to turn 51. I have never had...
You had a colonoscopy?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's...
I've had tried too.
When you turn 50, get your blood work done, get your poop search for DNA of... stuff. It's just something you have to do, right?
So I've never... Yeah. So the reason I haven't really focused on this is because I've never had as much sex drive in my life as I do now.
Okay.
And a large part of that... And I've been taking PrEP for 11 years because I took it... Started July 19th, 2011 before the FDA approval. So to your family member who says that the liver is affected, that is absolutely not true. There's no medical evidence to show that any of the drugs that are proved to be used for PrEP impact the liver.
Right.
They do want to monitor the kidneys if you're using Truvada. They do want to monitor LDL cholesterol levels and weight gain if you're going to use Descovy. But those are very, very rare and minor side effects. And we know this. I have been using it for 11 years. I get all these levels checked once a year in my annual physical. I'm healthy. I feel great. I feel more sex drive than ever. I don't know if I have high testosterone or not. I just know that so much of the way I felt physically changed when my brain changed, when my fear changed, when I started being able to experience connection and fucking without fear of HIV. It was like this heavy cloud was lifted, and I've been riding that train for 11 years now.
But this is the thing, you know, that I've observed in medicine and just having a lot of guests and listeners of the show sharing their medical frustrations with us. It's like, unless you're like putting intense amount pressure to your doctors, and a lot of people don't even one have access to a doctor, the clinics that they go to, they're fine with prescribing you PrEP, but they're not going to look at anything else. They don't even like sometimes they look at your blood pressure one time and it's like, oh, it's high. Okay, let's move on to PrEP, you know? And I'm like, but if your blood pressure is, you know, regularly high, then you might want to have a conversation with that because it's going to affect your kidneys and, you know, you PrEP might interfere with that, you know? So it does feel like our medical, you know, tools, the institutions we have, the resources that we have are sort of like looking at a tiny piece of the puzzle and they're not really equipped to looking at the big picture.
Well, that's American healthcare.
Yeah.
In a nutshell, right? That it's so compartmentalized that you don't have holistic, you rarely get clinics where they're looking at all your body parts, your mind, your body, your spirit, your capillaries, your blood pressure, your cholesterol. That is a rarity in our American healthcare system to get that all under one roof.
And that's why I want to start a new campaign today. PrEP is not just for sissies. Because, you know, like this family member was like, I'm not black, I'm not poor, and I'm not gay. So therefore, this doesn't matter, or this is not, HIV is not a concern for me.
Okay, so that speaks to that issue that we have been dealing with for 40 years, with people misunderstanding or misrepresenting their risk of acquiring HIV. I thought, you know, I'm so silly, and sometimes I'm an optimist, because I really thought after the Charlie Sheen issue came out a while back, when he was coming out about living with HIV and his female partners were talking about them, why they're not worried about having HIV, there were a lot of hints of PrEP. But I thought that was the opportunity to really bring this dialogue into the straight world, largely cisgender white straight world, because they are talking about PrEP. These women were talking about PrEP on the Today Show. They just didn't call it PrEP. They called it, quote, medication. And what a missed opportunity that was to show women that their risk of HIV is also out there.
Well, I remember years ago hearing a figure that most new HIV infections are, like 60% of them are from your primary partner. And most often it's because you got into a new relationship with this person and they didn't understand their status. You know, it's not somebody that's going out and taking like 20 loads a night for, you know, 50 years or something, you know what I mean? And so it's hard, and I've been talking to like young people I know, especially women, and it's like you have to protect yourself, especially early on in that relationship, while you don't know what's established and what's happening. So, and that's something to remind your family member.
And what prevents that conversation from happening in relationships, straight and gay relationships? What prevents people from sitting down and saying, hey, here's what I enjoy sexually. What do you enjoy sexually? It's shame. It's like it goes against that romantic.
Shame turns you on?
I love it. It gets back to that romantic idea that you were talking about earlier, that if you are going to be together, that it's in this heteronormative, monogamous, weird thing that doesn't really exist, in which one, quote, should be monogamous. And if they're not, then they are less than, then they are a whore, then they are a slut.
Not trustworthy.
And within those confines, it's really, really hard for two people to sit down and have an honest conversation about what they're really doing sexually, hence why we have higher rates of HIV in main relationships, according to the CDC. They are higher, people who are in a main relationship, gay people who are in a main relationship, are at higher risk of acquiring HIV than the sluts. For that reason.
So the more I slut it up, the safer I get. Phew.
Well, hopefully you're taking some kind of precaution.
Well, so in general, the sluts out there are the ones who are learning about PrEP, perhaps have exposure to healthcare systems that'll offer them PrEP and say, yes, this is the right choice for me to make.
I look at it more if you're more invested in a community. If you're having this discussion with a group of your peers, then there is a collective wisdom. You know, and part of it is like, with the COVID pandemic and, you know, all this like Ivermectin, the horse medicine that people were taking, it's not like they were sitting around a group of like 10 people having a conversation. It's usually they would read a blog entry by themselves late in the middle of the night and come to that conclusion on their own, isolated from, you know, a discussion with people, with their doctors, with friends and family. And, you know, and part of it is like this pandemic has sort of made me realize how isolated so many Americans are. You know, so Mark and I, to celebrate my 50th birthday.
Yay.
I'm 50.
Stretch. Kick
and stretch again. Thank you, Molly Shannon. And we'll take a little photo here. We flew down to Texas and celebrated with, you know, Austin is a second home to me. And so it was really, I have to say, Damon, it was probably the best birthday I've ever had. Low pressure, chilling out with friends and family, good food, just really relaxed. I even got to take a nap before my birthday, which has never happened. And I had such a wonderful time. Because, you know, it was like in a different space. Everybody, you know, there was this. When you're separated from people you love and you come together, there's always something really excited to talk about. Like we're with you, you know, like there's no shortage of wonderful things to talk about. And for me, I was like, you know, I've always told people you gotta fearlessly pursue your dreams, but they never see me doing it. Right. And necessarily, you know, and so this year I decided I'm working with a professional bodybuilding trainer to do my first competition in the fall of November, we're looking 2023.
Wow!
Yeah, so I'm like, And part of me is like, I went online and I saw like what the physiques look like in bodybuilding competitions over 50. And I was like, I could do that.
Wow.
So that's going to be a lot of like time, money, energy, food, you know, a lot of, I'm basically going to Olympics in the age of 50, you know?
Wow.
And I don't know if I'm like, you know, this is a midlife crisis or whatever, but, you know, it's part of it, like sharing that journey with the listeners and hopefully inspiring them to, you know, maybe not bodybuilding, but it's like building a car or traveling to an exotic place or whatever your dream is, you know, breaking that apart and sort of figuring out how to make it happen is a lesson that I want to share with everybody.
Beautiful. Hey, if you want to do it, that's great.
Yeah. So we were sitting in the airplane flying back home. Uh-huh. And by the way, if anybody wants to help to pay for the bodybuilding coach, you can do so by Cash App Fausto Fernos with the $ Fausto Fernos. Or you can do Venmo at Feast of Fun or paypal.me/feastoffun. Or you can also go to feastoffun.com/donate and make a one-time donation. And so we're at the airport and we hear this announcement coming back. Masks are now optional. And I was like, is this like some Southwest Airlines ad campaign? And sure enough, people started taking their masks off like it was, you know, brand new day in the Wiz.
It had just happened like 5 minutes beforehand. I guess some judge struck it down, right?
I saw a bunch of videos online of people who are on flights and like, yeah, but the Wiz is a really apt metaphor for
can
those
you images, feel you know? A brand new, they're, you know, Alvin Ailey dancers unzipping their leather, taking their mask. And part of it was like really interesting just seeing, you know, because this is like a very tense environment, the airport, right? People aren't comfortable. There's a danger. There's terrorism. Possibly.
People are stressed traveling. You know?
Stressed. You know, their planes are delayed. The plane lands, but it doesn't go to the gate. You know, all this other stuff. And it's like, and now we're in real time surrounded by people who are trying to figure out whether they're going to keep the mask on or off and no longer have to be like, you know, ma'am, this gentleman sitting next to me is not wearing his mask. So you know, it was a really interesting experience to go through, like a historic event.
I kept my mask on for most of the flight. I have to say I did take it down like during the flight, but like when we were boarding and when we were exiting and stuff, that was for sure on.
And I was just like,
But I've also had like 5 shots already.
We've had all our shots, yeah.
So having a vaccine makes a big difference.
But, you know, there are factories in China and other places that are shut down right now or trying to basically turn themselves into hotels where the workers live in the factory to make, you know, technology.
We have a listener in China who, Percival, who teaches kids over there. And he had like all the kids were sleeping at the school until they were all tested. So before they could be sent home or whatever. And like, he's not allowed to leave his apartment complex. I mean, there's armed guards out front. It's intense.
So are we being fools in the United States? Probably yes. Or no, or what do you make of this?
I don't think our response to this pandemic has been exemplary on any moment, so especially not now.
Has any government had a good response to the pandemic, or?
As I cough in your microphone.
I think Iceland did pretty well, and I think New Zealand did pretty well.
Let me put that mask
back on. But they're also like small, isolated places, you know, and so they've been able to control like who comes in and who comes out much easier.
I mean, I thought that other airlines like British Airways had already removed their mask mandate anyway. Not that that's okay medically. I'm just saying that I don't think the U.S. was the first country to remove the mask mandate on flights or public transportation.
So, so I mean, you know, will you be wearing, as you're coughing to death here?
It's just a cold.
So I know. So can I just say, like, I was so panicked earlier, like, yesterday and today that I had COVID again because I had in December. And I'm like, okay, it's really unlikely I could get it so quickly. But I was like doing all these home tests. They're all negative. And I was like, oh, yeah. Remember colds? Remember we used to get colds? I used to get colds all the time.
Yeah. I mean, I got a cold a month ago when we were traveling. And I was like every day doing the COVID test.
Yeah.
Worrying that I was like, oh, my God, I'm going to kill my family, you know?
Right. That's the worst feeling.
And it was all negative, you know? Yep. And I still wore masks, not to give them a cold, but it's still, you know.
So I do think that masks can be beneficial. I think especially like in cold season, like they do, I think they did protect me from getting colds a lot the last couple of years. And like, I haven't been wearing masks a lot lately. So maybe that's why I have a cold today. And also it was just like really, really cold in Chicago the last few days.
Making out with your gas in the tub talk.
That, you know, who knows that, who knows, but it's really hard to say, like, I'm going to be getting on a plane in 3 days. So I really don't like masks, but I also think medically they've been necessary. I've also had 5 shots and I've had COVID. So I know my immune system is extremely robust at this moment. I'm not particularly worried for myself, but Omicron's a bitch and Omicron is really crafty. And who's to say that I can't get it and then accidentally give it to others? I don't know. And while I don't know, I'm probably going to err on the cautious side than the non-mask side.
And you know, part of me is like cautious about how we even talk about COVID on the podcast, because I just don't want to be just another show that is spreading misinformation, you know, and well, I want to people to take action to protect themselves and to be safe.
That's where I think the framework of harm reduction comes in very handy, because there's a lot we know about COVID, but a lot we still don't know. And that's why when I talk about COVID, I use I statements. I'm saying this is what's going through my head. These are the sort of the decision-making tree I'm using based on the science that is available. And based on that, here's where my decision lands today. I'm not saying that's right or wrong for anybody else. And perhaps in a few months, we're going to know more that's going to say, no, wait, I had COVID at Christmas and now it's Easter, so maybe I am at high risk again. Who knows? At some point, we're going to know that. Well, that's why I qualify my statements with I statements based on the science we have available at this moment. Did we ever find out if any of those meds prevent the PrEP meds?
The Reuters thing came out in, let's see, when was it? What's the date? March 28th. And it says recent studies on COVID, they include research that warrants further study to corroborate the findings. But it has yet to be certified by peer review, saying that, yes, HIV drugs may curb COVID-19 risk.
So again, 2 years ago, it was a May, and it was based on the earlier data that they had with earlier versions of SARS, and the way people who had SARS before COVID-19 seemed to be impacted for the better when they were using antiretrovirals. So there were a lot of Mays 2 years ago. I was just, I'm not sure if any of them have panned out.
But like, even the way that we're talking about vitamin D, you know, it's like clearly vitamin D, you know, low vitamin D levels have been shown to make, you know, any viral infection, whether it's, you know, the flu or COVID, worse. And vitamin D levels go down in the winter months because we're indoors and we don't see the sun. And so just taking, you know, adequate amounts of vitamin D, and that's debatable what that is going to help you survive and mitigate the harms of this pandemic. But even suggesting to people, you know, something you can buy at Walgreens for very little money and take was like controversial. This is not horse tranquilizer stuff, right? And so there was that. There was also like edible marijuana, not smoking it, but edible marijuana had components in it that also helped mitigate the harm of viral infections like COVID. And so
I didn't know that.
And part of that is like, look, you know, we're sort of in the Dallas Buyers Club when it comes to our medicine still, because, you know, if unless there's a lot of money to be made of it, it ain't going to get researched, you know, and that goes for hormone levels and, you know, like the end of men. And I'm like, well, you know, it's like we're both agree there's a problem. But the solution is like leagues away from each other. And I don't know, like, you know, even crowdfunding or crowdsourcing solutions, like, you know, you go on, listen to podcasts where we talk about COVID. You can hear drag queens spreading all kinds of misinformation. You know, these
same thing with PrEP, same thing with U equals U, same thing with science. People just say shit. That's why, again, I always think it's important for people to make sure that they're using I statements. And if they are stating facts, say like, here's why. Like when I talk about PrEP not affecting the liver, I'm not just saying it because I think it's true. I'm saying it because I've been doing this work for 10 years. There are no studies. There's no evidence to support that any of the FDA approved regimens for PrEP impact the liver.
But you know, you're being viewed differently. People are judging you in a negative way because they see they're attached emotionally to this idea that PrEP is poison.
Right. it's an emotional attachment. Yeah, yeah. It's not a science attachment.
And you've experienced a lot of prejudice just by stating the facts.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. But again, like we were saying earlier, I think it's what people won't, when people don't feel agency or comfort in their own lives, that's when they attack and project shit on other people. I look at this Tucker Carlson thing and I'm like, so what's going on here? Like, what's he projecting? I think if you look at this video, you see like there's something going on with this guy. Like, and it's almost like a Saturday Night Live skit where this really, really repressed homosexual guy surrounds himself with the beefiest, buffest, you know, gay dudes.
Like Mae West.
Like Mae West, but I'm trying to think like where I've seen this satirized. Maybe South Park, but it's just like, well, where like someone Vladimir in the closet Putin, you know, is Vladimir like surrounded Putin by gay
on
guys.
The horse taking his shirt off.
The Pope, you know, I guess, is similar another example.
Similar thing, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, and part of it is like you were telling me before we started taping, which I thought was really interesting. We talk about the call coming in from inside the house. When it comes to abuse, systemic abuse of LGBTQ people, it's our own community do more of the harm to us than anyone outside of it.
Absolutely. No straight person has ever given me shit for using PrEP.
Politics aside. Doesn't matter. Politics aside. Yeah.
Clinically, we call that projection. Projection is this idea when there's an unacceptable thought or impulse or desire that I have, and in my mind, it's not okay. There's a should against it.
Yeah.
The next thing I'm going to do is attack or criticize or judge someone who's confined by the same boundary.
But you were saying that this applies to children.
Absolutely.
Well.
So when bullies, we see
our bullies from when we were kids were identifying or seeing the latent LGBT quality, the homosexuality, the transness in us, and they were seeing that because they saw it in themselves and they were wanting to eradicate it, so they punished us.
Right. That is absolutely. So most of the time when kids bully other kids for being gay or for being, quote, a faggot, it is because they are struggling with their own impulses, their own desires, their own challenges, their own questions. And instead of doing it appropriately and getting the help they need, which most kids are not going to get, they're projecting it against the kid who's effeminate or being teased already. It's an easier way to deal with insecurity and doubt. The studies
they're with adults in schools who also have that unresolved issue as well.
Yeah, right? I mean, so, often they're hearing this from their parents, or they're, you know, they're hearing this from their church, or they're hearing it wherever they're hearing it, that you can't be gay. But if you're a gay kid and you're like, uh-oh, but I'm gay, the next natural thing you're going to do is try to stomp it or squish it out in somebody else, because that is the answer at that moment for you, instead of being encouraged and celebrated for being gay yourself. Now, the studies they've done around this shows with adults, when there's a bunch of adults, men, and they put electrodes to their dick, they've actually done these studies.
This is not at a leather conference.
It's not. They've shown like, okay, so guys who identify as straight, who have anti-gay attitudes, get very, very aroused when they're exposed to gay porn.
But this is adults.
These are adults. Yeah. And then we've seen that guys who identify as straight, who have no problem with gay people, have no anti-gay stances at all, nothing happens when they're exposed to gay porn. There's no response at all. And what that has led scientifically is to this path of saying, so it looks like from this, it looks like we're getting a better sense of saying what homophobia is really about. It's typically someone who's gay, who is repressed, who is trying to extinguish this part of themselves by projecting that onto others. Mm-hmm. And I think we've seen this play out politically over and over and over again with Donald Trump. You know, Crooked Hillary, Sleepy Joe, whomever, whatever label he's called other people. It's always something that he's doing himself. It's always an attribute that he has himself.
Like you never hear him criticizing somebody for being a workaholic.
Right. Or being financially responsible, or having integrity or character or compassion.
Well, or even the like negative traits that we agree upon are negative traits, but that he doesn't see in himself, he's not going to latch on to somebody else.
Right. But every time he makes an accusation against someone, it's always something we find out either in the moment or shortly afterwards that he has done himself. And so that's projection.
And so part of these, like, don't say gay bills in Florida, that kind of stuff, and some of that, it's going to continue that cycle of abuse of intolerance, because these kids don't feel comfortable being themselves. So if they see somebody being gay, they're going to bully them. And then you can't talk about it.
Right. Right. It really puts these kids in a really dangerous situation, in my opinion.
And, you know, part of me also feels like a lot of this stuff is shadow banning, too. You know, so it's like we have these laws that says don't say gay in Texas, Florida. You know, well, Florida's been passed. Texas and Oklahoma are in the danger of being passed. But, you know, like our social media and social networks, to some degree, having these kind of conversations, whether it's videos or podcasts or blogs or anything, the term shadow banning exists, where you post something, you know, 100,000 people like a page or a Twitter account for a reason, because they want to know and see the content that this source is going to create. But if it's attached to certain words that advertisers don't want to support, then the social media networks bury it intentionally.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, for me, it's like, let's grow big together. And people are always like, why do you speak in codes? I'm like, because part of it is we're using the newest technology to circumvent that shadow banning, that idea to be able to talk about our bodies and about
it's
sex.
It's a Trojan horse, right?
It's a Trojan horse, literally, you know, Trojan condoms, which hired us to be their models.
What?
One Pride Parade.
Wow.
Which I was like, so flattered.
Wow.
So Mark and I show up and they're like, yeah, you'll be fine. And like they looked up at and dust down and was like, yeah, just stand on the float with the other strippers.
So here's why I'm optimistic.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think when we were all growing up, there was a don't say gay in school. And it may not have been a rule, but it was the kind of the way it was, at least in my school. Mm-hmm. You couldn't say gay. No teachers could identify as gay. It wasn't spoken about. There was an erasure of gay people ever spoken about. And there were no gay people in the media. So we had to figure this out for ourselves. We had to and there was no social media. I had to figure out how to find that community. I had to figure out who I could trust. I'm not saying that was good. I'm just saying you can't stop gay people from being gay. You can't stop gay teens from coming out just because you have a don't say gay ban.
People said, you can't stop the music.
Can't stop the music. The difference is now, today, there's Feast of Fun. There's Let's Get Big Together. There's Tub Talks. There's all these other sources of information and data showing gay people celebrating life, celebrating sex, celebrating getting bigger, spiritual practice. All these messages that we have now on social media that the three of us did not have when we were growing up. Mm-hmm. And that makes me very hopeful that despite these hateful, disgusting laws that are going to be traumatizing and hard, that at least these kids have other outlets for understanding. You can be okay. I'm not saying it gets better, because I don't believe that, but I'm saying you get better. We get better. As we continue to have these conversations together, we get healthier.
Because there are a lot of resources out there. You're just not going to find it at school.
Right.
I don't, you know, that's why to me, I'm like, I don't want to tell anybody that it gets better, because that was like complete bullshit. Yeah,
that's not.
And it was like monetizing bullying for somebody's personal enrichment. And who really should be having more, I would like to see them having more of a conversation about LGBTQ sexuality than just mainstream sexuality. But, you know, part of it is for me, it's like, it's this idea that I don't want to be one of those, adults be like, you know, in my day, we had to masturbate to the underwear ads in JCPenney and Sears catalogs.
Because you did.
Yeah, because I did.
You international know, now, mail catalogs.
International mail, you know, or Bo Brady, Soloflex ads.
Days of Our Lives.
You know, and so I was just like, you know, and like even I posted this photograph of myself. 25 to 50.
Oh, you're so cute.
So me at the age of 25 and drag, looking like
baby.
Skinny and...
Is that Rita Repulsa?
It's
is that
so cute.
And then me at the age of 50.
Yes!
Know? So, and people are like, what a transformation. And, you know, because they're thinking that like more masculinity or more muscularity is better. And I'm like, these are two authentic, and I want to really clarify that. These are two authentic expressions of who I am. I never, never stopped talking like Eartha Kitt. And I never stopped going to the gym and sweating. Because if you want fame, fame costs. And here is where you pay with sweat.
Yes.
And so for me, it's like, it's interesting that this idea, this meme, this you're born naked and everything is drag, which comes from Judith Butler, the feminist theorist. And then RuPaul, you know, passes that on television. I think I want people to pause and step back and analyze that assumption, because as LGBTQ people, we're so used to being erased. We're so used to being told we're not real. You know, like bodybuilding is similar. They say it's not a real sport, or that experimental theater is not real theater, or that trans women are not real women. And it's that you're not real is an attack that's usually used. And so we're so comfortable with being told we're not real. We're like saying, well, nothing is real then. And I'm like, why don't we take the opposite approach and say, all these things that we do are real, and sometimes they contradict each other, and sometimes they're confusing to other people because we're complicated people, because we're so unique that it is possible to be a 125-pound drag queen at the age of 25 and a 225-pound bodybuilder at the age of 50, and those be the same person and both be okay with each other.
That's beautiful.
I just want to say that
that's
out
well
there.
Put.
That
is the wisdom of a 50-year-old right there.
I reject RuPaul's statement, you're born naked and everything is drag. Because the drag is a reflection of your authentic self, too.
I guess my statement is like, oh, well, if we were meant to have conversations naked, we would have been born that way. What do you think of that? I say that to my TED Talk guests.
So do you feel like the nudity is like this kind of obstacle that people have to overcome in order to talk, to connect?
I know that for a lot of people, it's a gray area that they work through, that a lot of people have to do a lot of mental exercise in order to get in that tub, take off their clothes and have a conversation with me. Now, typically, by the time they get in the tub, within about 40 seconds, they feel great. They feel like, oh, yeah, this is totally normal. This feels wonderful. But it's that whole mental process of saying it's going to be difficult for me to have a conversation naked. And I'm just like, look, if we were meant to have conversations naked, we would have been born that way.
Well, you learn to adapt to it. Yeah. You know, I've been in those kind of like, I've been invited to nudist parties and I've gone and it's awkward in the beginning. But after a while, you just kind of forget about it. And you think like, this is just normal human beings. This is bodies and we're naked, and it kind of like levels the playing field in many ways.
So you're nervous at the beginning, you get used to it. And then like me, once I'm used to it, I'm like, can I put a blanket on? I'm freezing. I'm time to go.
That's another problem. But I guess, Mark, people can see that for themselves when you're on my Tub Talk show, which we haven't filmed yet, but we are going to be filming, and it's going to be probably playing in about mid-late May at TubTalksWithDamon.com. So when people want to see you, we're filming it this
8
week.
8 p.m.
We're going to film it this week.
At a downtown hotel.
And people, if they want to see Fausto in my tub, they can still go to Tub Talks with Damon and look at the playlist and see, like, Fausto Fornos. You were one of the first interviews and the first group of people. And certainly one of the highest rated that I've did.
And there's no space for you in the tub.
There's plenty of space.
Like when we're bathing our dog, he's like splashing water all over the place.
Foster and I used to have a bathtub at our old apartment. It was a big, giant iron claw foot tub, and we could both fit into it. It was lovely.
Love it.
I know. And to me, I was just like, oh my God, you know, I would love to have a jacuzzi. And I love the jacuzzi tubs, you know, they're just comfortable.
Well, and what I like is that they're so relaxing, they're so fun, and that people do open up more when they're naked. And when they open up, every single guest has simply wowed me with their thoughts, with their ideas about things they're doing to change the world. And I'd say it is the perfect antidote to the 24/7 genocide we are seeing on the news right now that's being covered on all cable news networks. And I'm not saying that it's misrepresentation, because I believe that's really happening. It is really happening.
That's a misunderstood's evil cousin.
What?
The drag queen misunderstood. Misrepresentation.
Okay.
It's her arch nemesis.
But I'm saying, if people want to go somewhere, well, your show always spots like this. But if they also want to see interviews with people who are actually changing the world for the better, I would invite them to come check out a few of the Tub Talks with Damon episodes.
You're shadow banned by that for calling them Tub Talks. Like, is it the TED Talks people doing it, or is it YouTube or Facebook?
So I was getting banned from the Meta group for talking about, for the Facebook and Instagram for talking. And I thought that they were trying to censor my content. Turns out, maybe you already knew this, if you type a URL with your name in it, they consider that spam and they will remove it. That's what was going on. So I was typing URL, tubtalkswithdamon.com. Because Damon is in it, tubtalkswithdamon.com, they consider that spam, and they removed all of that content.
Who did that? Facebook?
Meta, the Meta group.
Social media.
So Instagram and Facebook.
Oh, okay. But not Twitter.
No, Twitter, let me do whatever.
Or the Elon Musk network.
Which is weird, because I don't really use Twitter very often.
If you type it in, as opposed to copy it?
If I do tubtalkswithdamon.com, they immediately remove the post, or now I can't even type it. Like, not even a private message directly with someone. I can't type tubtalkswithdamon.com.
But if you can post the YouTube video, though.
I can post a link to the video, and I can say the word tub, and I can say the word talk.
But not your name.
But I cannot say my name. if I'm posting about Tep Talks with Damon.
All this time we were saying Feast of Fun and
yeah,
and
so if you had called it Feast of Fausto, they would have banned you a long time ago.
Oh, wow.
But because you called it Fun or Fools, they never got onto that.
Well, I still think we're kind of shadow banned in some things anyway, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it is it's so interesting because, like, you know, and the opposite is true. So, like, find the thing where, because on Instagram, I'll post a shirtless photo of myself at the gym, 15,000 likes, easy, no problem. On Facebook, it's like, you know, ew, what is this? Why not? You know, it's like there's a lot of controversy on Facebook. And part of that is, you know, as my friend who's a television producer, Kirthy, says, it's like, because I, you know, when we were doing a lot of interviews with drag queens and we'd be like, God, this person is just so difficult. And, you know, we don't get any problems with any publicist or manager from any, we've had the biggest names and the most famous people on the show, never had any problems. It's these like podunk drag queen, first, second eliminated RuPaul's Drag Race. They're like impossible to deal with.
Except for James Mansfield.
Except for James Mansfield, just to clarify. You know, and part of that is it's that like they have all these walls, you know, and all these rules and all these assumptions. And, you know, in doing this bodybuilding podcast, that stuff comes back up too. It's like, but in a different way, it's like someone saying like, well, the right way to do this is this way. And anything that deviates from that fact that I came up with myself and, you know, self-diagnosed fact. Not based on any empirical data, no observation, nothing. It's just a fact that they came up with themselves. And I'm not getting the results I want, but I'm going to continue doing it because it's based on faith.
That sounds like a should, right?
Yeah, it's like the right way. That's what I was responding to. It's like anytime should. You tell me the right way, I think should. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I'm always like telling them, it's like, look, you know, there's all these great resources. Try something new because what works for me is not going to work for you and vice versa, you know? And it is possible to be have a restricted diet and build muscle if that's what you want to do, but it's just going to be more difficult. And if you're up for the challenge of being more difficult, then pursue it, but understand that people who are making these claims may not be making them on good faith.
Yeah.
You know, because they want to see a jacked up bodybuilder say, I'm natural. I'm not taking any testosterone replacement or hormones or steroids. And I'm vegan and I only go to the gym once a week. And I, you know, I live by a pool in a really rich hotel and I eat hamburgers and pizza. They're vegan. And I'm just like, this is just a bucket of lies and you're creating these walls and you need to discover for yourself what works for you by trying new things.
Wow.
Mr. Vegetables.
Yeah. You know, that ain't going to happen. Anytime soon, anytime ever. I'm 50 now. I think my body would go into toxic shock if I ate a vegetable at this point. But that reminds so again.
Vegetables on pizza, don't you?
Well, no, he doesn't like
if they have tomato sauce as a vegetable, so technically, sure. Okay. But yeah, I'm probably the last person who can speak to nutrition or healthy eating or healthy bodybuilding. What I know is that for me and for so many of the people I'm talking to in my tub in their 50s and 60s, this time in our lives, and I'm talking with guys like bears or big guys, is such a sexual renaissance. Like so many of these guys are saying, I have so much more sex and attention and now in my 50s and 60s than I ever had in my 20s and 30s. And we're not talking bodybuilders here. We're talking about like big hairy dudes. And they're just getting so much attention, partly because they're gorgeous and partly because their own internal sense of value is so much deeper now than it ever was in their 20s and 30s. They feel fabulous. They emote fabulous sexiness. And then when they go out into the world or they go on the grinder, they like get that kind of attention all the time.
So is this becoming this sort of like self-fulfilling prophecy where like, you know, you have the technology now to connect with somebody who thinks you look good just as the way you are. And so then you start accepting the fact that you are beautiful just the way you are, which is very, you know, Mr. Rogers, very Christian. You are worthy of being loved just by being you. You do not have to do anything.
I think that is a wonderful, healthy cycle for people to get into. And I wish more people were using social media in that way you're describing, to have a bias that you confirm through these experiences. I am beautiful. I am valuable. I am sexy. I am loved. And then attracting energy in your life, which further confirms it. Unfortunately, what I see is that a lot of people do the opposite. They have all this internal sense of maybe I'm not good enough. I'm not not beautiful enough. I'm not sexy enough at a certain age. And then they kind of act in a way that repels energy and sort of create a self-fulfilling prophecy around that. But a lot of the people I'm talking to in my tub, and I know this is true in my own life, that the more I get centered within myself, within my spirit, within my confidence, the more energy and attention I garner in my life. And I'm not a bodybuilder. I'm not like all that. But I just, I know
you
I feel
better.
Well, I feel better now than I used to.
Tell, what do you do? Because you are in good shape.
Thank you.
You do follow an exercise regimen. What do you do?
Basically, I go to the gym, Planet Fitness, by my office 3 to 4 times a week.
You eat donuts and pizza.
I don't eat donuts. I don't like donuts, but I do
when
eat
you
a
check
lot
in.
Of pizza.
But you're in New York, so it's good pizza.
It's good pizza. Oh, my God. It's so good.
So you're going to the gym about 3 to 5
times? About 3 to 4 times a week. Uh-huh. And generally, what
do
I do
is... full body workout at the...
Mostly, go, I say, like, for the most part, tits. Like, that's always been my thing.
So you do a lot of upper body,
upper
chest.
Body... lift, whatchamacallit, pulling the cables,
cable
arms, wrists. To me, it's more an exercise in mental health, physical health, and vanity, but not always in that order. But I like to run. I love running. Running always makes me feel like clear-headed. And I love lifting. And then what I do is I put on a mix of my phone of about 10 songs and just play them spontaneously because it's the only time during my day that I just listen to music and I'm not doing like 10 million things at once.
Mm-hmm.
And then just go with that. That's kind of been my thing since 1997. That's just like how I work out.
That's how I feel about like Tucker Carlson's infrared testicle tanning or whatever the thing is like. I think if you just like took all your clothes off and laid down and pretended you were at a spa and you're home, it could have like up to, you know, 90% of therapeutic benefits of going to a real spa. You know, like it's
just relaxing,
just relaxing, doing
being
nothing
in the
and being in your body and just enjoying the warmth of, you know,
I turn our little bathroom into a spa, especially in the winter. I take a heater in there.
Uh-huh.
I turn, plug that in. I get the hot water going. Epsom salts, bubbles, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
My husband is so good at guiding me into self-care.
Yeah.
Because I'm always like, oh, I'm so in so much pain. He's like, have you taken an Epsom salt bath yet?
Mm-hmm.
And
those
I'm like,
for
no.
It'll help.
Those are good for you.
It does help. And, you know, especially if you're one of those senior jacuzzis.
Well, yeah.
You know, it's like, that to me is like, you know, people see it and they're just horrified by it. Because it looks like one of those like a wheelchair thing that gets you into the swimming pool.
This is your mom's?
Yeah, in my mom's house.
How many people could fit into that?
Two.
Okay.
Comfortable. Well, you know, it is kind of like a big giant dumpster. You know what I'm saying?
Well, because I'm thinking like what I would love to do if I could do
water.
It, I would love to like find a big tub, like a big hot tub and have like 3 or 4 guests and do like a naked version of The View. And like have like 4 very strong opinionated naked people debate like hot topics of the day.
But how you got to get lavaliers, waterproof lavaliers for people.
Yeah.
You know,
it would be technical, but that's sort of my dream.
I'd say crowdfund it, you know, and you just rent a jacuzzi and do like a
Sybaris pool suite or something.
Oh, my God. Do you know how many people would fly themselves to be part of something like that? If you had a production crew with a multi-camera and waterproof lavaliers and lighting in a Sybaris, in a crazy one of those, you know, Pocono Mountain romantic getaway tubs.
And one of those giant champagne glasses.
Oh my God. Champagne glass swimming pool.
It's like Can't Stop the Music. Back to the Village People.
I know.
Such a terrible movie.
Oh, I love that though. When she's like in the champagne glass and she's like dancing around and kicking around in the champagne glass, like Valerie Perrine.
One thing before we wrap up, Mark and I have been rediscovering the 1981 original series Dynasty.
Yes.
Starring Joan Collins, John Forsythe, Linda Evans, and Diane Carroll.
Beautiful.
Incredibly talented, legendary actors in their own right. John Forsythe is known as the voice of Charlie.
Yeah, and John James, who is so hot.
Gorgeous. Linda Evans.
Jack Holman.
Yeah, amazing, amazing, you know.
Do you like the first son or the second son better? Who was hotter?
Jack Holman was the second
the
one.
The second
yeah,
one.
Yeah, yeah, I liked it. Well, he had been Jake on Days of Our Lives.
Oh, okay.
So it's already familiar with him.
And
but he was good.
For the listeners, you used to do a podcast called about soap opera.
We Love Soaps, yeah.
We Love Soaps.
Yeah.
Where you interviewed a lot of these little retired actors.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, it was a job.
Basically.
And you're like, it was so crazy.
It was the best thing ever.
I loved it. And they're like, yeah, that's cool.
Basically, that is the synopsis of my soap career. Exactly.
And the thing about it is, like, I'm watching this and I'm just like, it's so influenced by the films of Douglas Sirk. And it has such a gay aesthetic, literally, like, you know, it's pre-AIDS with
the first year was pre-AIDS.
Major plot lines of gay characters. You know, it's like it feels like RuPaul, the precursor to RuPaul's Star Booty. My cousin is my father, is my lover, is my brother. What? You look, as usual, like a whore.
As usual.
Well, I loved it. They went with the camp. That's where they were getting their attention. So, they went with it, and they really did it.
I'm asking people about Dynasty, and they're all like, you know, older family members who are like about, you know, 5 or 6 years older. And when you watched it on television, did you guys laugh? Did you think it was funny and stuff? And they're like, we took it at face value, dead serious. They did not think it was campy at all. They were like, Linda Evans is so beautiful and so sophisticated. And Joan Collins, even though she's a bitch, her makeup is flawless.
I guess, you know? For me, I didn't know what camp was because I was just a teenager when that show was on, when it was really like in its early years. So we didn't have the irony aspect, but I just like loved it as a kid. The gorgeous gowns, the witty dialogue, the gorgeous women. That was a women-centered show.
Yeah,
all those egos getting busted.
And I was also like Dallas. I was a huge Dallas fan, which didn't really have the campy aspect. But again, it was like this, you know, dysfunctional family in this world that you don't typically see represented, getting into fights every week. It was just so much fun. But then, as you know, Dynasty was at the center of HIV and AIDS controversy in the 1980s when Rock Hudson was on the show. And then Kiss Linda Evans while he was living with AIDS at a time when the scientists knew you didn't get it by kissing, but the general public did not know that by 1985.
Mm-hmm. And Linda Evans didn't know.
She, you know, I think everyone freaked
she
out.
She says in an interview that she did not know.
She did not know that?
Yeah.
Okay. So she had an AIDS scare through that.
Yeah.
And, you know, Rock Hudson was mercilessly skewed by the media and the press for, you know, living with HIV and AIDS and being on Dynasty at that time. And, you know, that informed my childhood.
Well, he didn't want to kiss her.
Yeah.
So he was fighting against kissing her, but he wasn't out about being HIV positive. And Linda Evans was also like, and so they forced them to kiss in that scene is what Linda Evans says.
Okay.
You know, and she was like, she has complete sympathy and forgiveness and, you know, love for Rock Hudson. And she feels also that he was scapegoated and targeted, you know,
because it was huge in the tabloids about that whole kiss. And that
absolutely.
Whole thing, you know, and at that point in time, a lot of, you know, anybody who was gay knew that Rock Hudson was gay. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of people knew, but it still wasn't like out that he was gay.
Right. And we didn't have social media back then. We just had the National Enquirer. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of speculation, but nothing that was really tangible. And I was 14. And I just remember when all that happened with Rock Hudson and Linda Evans, I was like, okay, this is why you can never be gay. This is why you can never come out. Because if you do, you're going to die of AIDS like Rock Hudson.
Right. I think a lot of people.
But in the first and second season of Dynasty, you have Joan Collins.
Mm-hmm. She was on the second season.
The second season, saying that she loved and accepted her gay son unconditionally.
Yes,
you know, which was really far years ahead of her. And you know, her time. And she's such a great actor that to this day, like I posted on social media, like we've been cackling and enjoying watching it on YouTube and on Apple TV and stuff. And it's like. And people are like, you know how Joan Collins is just so evil. She is such a terrible person. And I'm like, that is a character she played in a show that did not happen in real life.
Look, like, here's the deal with most dramas and most soap operas. The women who play the bitches, the antagonists,
the villains,
are usually the sweetest people in real life. And opposite. Usually the women who are the heroes, the nice ones on air, not all the time, but most of the time, they are so impossibly mean to deal with in real life.
Like
so
it's usually the opposite. Soap dish, right?
Yes. So Susan Lucci played the villainess for 41 years, one of the nicest people on earth. She's very private.
Are they?
You met her, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel so like, nice. Are they bringing all my children back for a limited
It's ominous. So ABC Primetime was working with Kelly Ripa and Mark Consuelos to bring back a primetime version of Pine Valley. Mm-hmm. And it was going to be sort of this new incarnation of All My Children. It seems to be in limbo right now. But okay. Susan Lucci said she would do it if they ever get off the ground, that she would be part of it.
Wow. But the problem with the shows like that is that if they take themselves too serious, they want to be taken seriously. And they're also, the premise is so campy. And it's really like, I think like Desperate Housewives in its first couple seasons balanced that.
Yes.
To some degree.
And then it became cartoonish.
And then it just became it goes off the rails. Ugly Betty had a similar problem. Yeah. And you know, and I think like Mark says, British sitcoms or comedies, they last a couple of seasons and then they're done.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's also, right. How do you create compelling fiction in a world where everyday news, political news, mm-hmm. war, COVID, in and of itself has so much drama and tragedy attached to it? Like, how do you create a fictional narrative that's compelling when there's so much shit going on all around you?
I don't know if you need to. I mean, part of it is like, we rediscovered the new adventures of Wonder Woman and Dynasty. And these are shows that are, you know, with the technology that we have today, they can do, you know, high resolution film scans of the original footage and have this 4K gorgeous 1970s TV show where there's a talking computer dog and, you know, a chimpanzee and a little girl from Atlantis and Wonder Woman solving mysteries, or, you know, Diane Carroll and Joan Collins strangling each other over, you know, beluga caviar or burnt champagne. And to me, I'm just like, you know, maybe we need to do more watching television like someone who checks out old books at the library.
Well, you know what I think is really, really called for? And here's my opinion. We need a modern day Facts of Life. Because that show was so adaptable. Yeah. Well, they did those stupid remakes.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, I'm talking about, like, honestly showing teenage girls at Eastland, you know, with Blair, with Lisa Welcho as in the Mrs. Garrett Rell, because I've already casted her in my mind. And
Jerry Jewell.
And she would be, Jerry Jewell would jump in as well. But but showing these teenage girls and what they're really going through today in the 20s, in this world.
Isn't that Euphoria? Are you watching Euphoria?
Euphoria is like the movie Kids that came out in 1995, and it just makes me thank God every day I'm not a parent. Because if I had a teenage kid, Euphoria would be the very last thing I would ever watch. It's the scariest show on earth. If you have a teenage kid, do not watch this show. Parental discretion is advised.
Right.
But I love it. For
Eric Dane is very sexy, though, I have to say. He's a hot daddy.
Yeah, he was like a McDreamy something on
Grey's Anatomy.
Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah.
Sini, I think, or which
he
one
was one of the other doctors.
He was the Max something.
But otherwise, I love that show. I love the soundtrack.
Yeah.
Labyrinth is a really good artist.
Damon, it's so great to celebrate my 50th birthday with you.
Happy 50!
Welcome to the 50s.
Welcome to the club.
Any guidance?
Are now all the same decade again.
Yes.
Any guidance for you know, living your best life at 50 plus?
Embrace the power. Embrace the purpose. Embrace the pleasure.
All right. Can do.
All right.
It was funny.
Power, purpose, pleasure.
We were at a bar in Austin, and the guy's just like, wow, I can't believe your husband's 50. He doesn't look at it. I'm like, I know, I married an old man.
Remember, folks, Feast of Fun is made possible because of your financial support. Please go to feastoffun.com/donate and make a one-time donation, or access thousands, literally thousands, over 3,000 episodes of legendary podcasts at feastoffun.com/plus. You'll have the good feeling in your heart that you're supporting a show that you love and ensuring its future success.
For the next 50 years.
5,500 years.
We'll be back for the 100th. Fausto.
And we're on Patreon. Patreon.com/FeastOfFun. And of course, please support my bodybuilding journey. Because that ain't cheap. And please go to just Cash App. Mm-hmm. Cash App Fausto Fernos or Venmo Feast of Fun.
Or just send food, protein.
Yeah, if you access
grass-fed beef.
Grass-fed beef is great.
Some salmon.
Whey protein is great. Frozen eggs. The shipment of eggs. Yeah, how many eggs are we eating in a day now? It's crazy. I finally learned to eat 4 eggs a day. So hard to do that. It's been a lifelong challenge because I'm not one of those people that, like, I could just eat a plate of eggs.
I could eat a plate of eggs.
Mark can, but
Foster calls me like a python because I'll have a soft boiled egg. I just scoop it out, and he's just like, just swallow that thing whole.
You just unhinged your jaw.
Comes in handy.
Damon L. Jacobs. People can find the Tub Talks
at tubtalkswithdamon.com.
But if they're looking for it on YouTube, just search TUB Talks.
Yeah, Tub Talks with Damon. DAMON. Or go to tubtalkswithdamon.com.
Damn. Thank you so much.
Or people can go to damonljacobs.com.
Thank you so much for your wisdom, and thank you so much for helping people fearlessly be themselves.
You too. We're in this together. Yeah. So,
let's grow big together.
Let's grow big together.
Except
let's grow
heart.
Better together.
Yes. Except your heart muscle. You want to keep that, in check. Do your cardio.
Let's grow bolder together.
Strong.
Let's grow beautiful together.
Ooh. Oh. Already there.
Okay.
Done.
Thanks.
Goodbye,
bye,
everyone.
Bye, everybody. Oh, that's great.